Welcome to the X29 Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Metters. Being a member of a Christ-centered church is a unique privilege of believers. Christ has a particular love for his church and his children, and so should we. But often we love the idea of church more than we love the church itself. So how do we grow in our love for the church? Well, Tony Marita joins me on the podcast today to discuss his new book, Love Your Church, 8 Great Things About Being a Church Member. Tony's the founding pastor of Imago Dei Church there in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's the director of theological training for X29, dean of Grimke Seminary, a big baseball fan, and Tony and his wife Kimberly are raising 5 adopted kiddos. And he's also the podfather of X29.
Actually, I don't think I am. I passed it on to you from Darren Patrick.
Yeah, we've got a long history of the podcast, and so it's great to be having the baton from you. Mm-hmm. Just a real joy. So I'm grateful for you, man, and X29, and it's great to have you on the show now. First time on the show as a guest.
Wow, I kind of miss doing a podcast, honestly. I just loved, you know, engaging with the various guests, but I'm really enjoying your work, Jeff.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. We have a great team at X29. I love working with A29. We've got Christy Britton and Amy Tyson and Aaron Logan and you and just Rachel Wolverton and everybody in the communications and training department and podcast team. It's just a blast, and I love working here. And Tony, as I read in the intro, you wear a lot of hats. You've got Grimke, you've got the church, you've got X29. You write books. You've also got a lot going on. So I think listeners would probably just love to know, like, what does a typical day in the life of Tony Marita look like?
Yeah, it's very non-impressive, Jeff. Well, I mean, I do wear a lot of hats, but I should say I have a great team. Great team at Grimke that allows me to keep a manageable schedule. And so while being the dean of a seminary sounds like a lot of work, it's really tailor-made for my life and the amount of time I can give to it. And so a lot of my work at Grimke was done on the front end of just helping frame the model of this particular seminary. And now it's running well, and we have full-time individuals who are devoting, you know, their entire week to executing the vision of Grimke. And so now I get to play the role really of teaching a class a semester, doing a bit of writing, attending meetings. And it's just not as time consuming as it may sound. Now, it may eventually get there, but we're kind of like a little church plant. I mean, we're a startup. And so things are developing quickly, and we're all just nimble. We're playing various roles, but I'm indebted to the guys in Richmond who are given 40 hours plus a week to it. And then at Acts 29, of course, I have a great team with you and Christy. I'm able just to cast some vision, and you guys are running and doing wonderful work. And then at our church as well, I have tremendous staff and elders that give me time outside of IDC to do the kinds of things that you've just mentioned with Grimke and Acts 29. And so I'm not sure how many churches would allow me this kind of freedom and flexibility to try to impact, the church outside of our own local church. Being a pastor is still my priority. It's still where I give the majority of my time. But I do have a lot of freedom and flexibility and competent and capable people here to work with that allow me to do these kinds of things. And they want me to do them. And that's not just that I'm allowed to, but they encourage me in all of this work. So, in terms of what a week looks like or a day looks like, it's pretty standard. I go through the same old man breakfast pattern.
Some oatmeal. What are you doing?
I mean, if you really want to know, I can go into great detail. But I have something that allows my system to get going early in the morning. I have a cup of coffee. I eat an apple. I boil 2 or 3 eggs, and then I have my toast and eggs, and I drink some creatine for my workouts, and a multivitamin. And then after you know, I've been in the Bible for an hour or so. I usually start my work. And so the mornings I try to give to writing and sermon prep. And so that normally goes till about 11 in the morning. And then that's when I like to go to the gym. So I kind of do the gym as a lunch routine. So the workout's about an hour, hour and a half, 4 days a week. And then I get a protein shake on the way out. And that's my lunch. And shower up, get back in the office, work from 1 to 5. And then, when I get home, it's just kind of relaxed, hang with the family. Occasionally there's some Acts 29 stuff going on. As you know, the West Coast time is different. And so, I tend to be answering messages probably up until 7 PM or so, but that's pretty relaxed and chilled unless there's a lot of drama. The same with Grimke, you're just kind of always on call with that. And, I go to bed early and, just try to enjoy the family, in the evenings. And that's what a typical day in terms of the work week. It's I try to do all my sermon prep on Monday. It's about 70% done by Monday. Wow. I finish it up on Tuesday. And so I've got what I think is the biggest priority of my week finished for the most part. I'll still marinate on it all week long.
Yeah.
But that frees me up to have meetings, frees me up to do writing and that kind of thing. We have staff day on Wednesday. So today is a Wednesday on the day in which we're recording this. And I'll just meet with folks in our church, elders, staff, all day long. Thursday, Friday is kind of a big Acts 29, blue sky thinking kind of time.
Yeah, great. Well, man, there's so much going on in Acts 29 and in Grimke. I guess maybe tell us, like, what are some things that encourage you, what most encourages you about advancing the mission of these two organizations, Acts 29 and Grimke?
I think for Acts 29... when you think about why to join Acts 29 or what's significant and distinct about Acts 29, I think if you just use the acronym ACTS, it explains itself. A is assessment. I think we do a thorough job of assessment. We're always wanting to improve, and I think we are. The C for collaboration, coaching, it used to be called, but I prefer the C as collaboration. And that's a big one. That's how we network with each other.
Yeah.
I'm able to connect with Karim in Turkey and Femi in Nigeria and One in South Africa and Marwan in Beirut, and collaborate with Church and Heart Places, and just you feel very much part of a global family, and that's what we aim to be. I was just talking to a church planter who's in the process, who planted out of our church right now in Washington, D.C. I was preaching there this past Sunday. They need some staff. They need a worship leader, that kind of thing. And one of the things that's great about being in Acts 29 is you know that there are like-minded churches out there that are raising up, you know, leaders. And that's the first place I would go is a fellow Acts 29 church. So that collaborative work is huge. The T's for training, and that's, of course, what I get to be part of with formal and informal training. I provide a lot. I try to give some consultation to people if they want my help on suggestions on ways to train people in preaching or leadership or church planting. I'm also free to go and do some of that training or recommend others to do training. I get to do a good bit of that around the world. And then, with Grimke, that's obviously more formalized. And then I'm part of the greater Acts 29 training team called the Arch Project, which we meet over Zoom regularly. And these are leaders around the world that are doing different kinds of seminary training and Bible college training. And so that's just a real wonderful collaborative effort there. We're trying to produce more and more materials. We've got books rolling out with the Acts 29 brand on them. We've been working toward an academic journal as part of the Arch Team project. So several different things. Grimke's got a new journal that's about to drop maybe next month, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, great.
Edition. So a lot of good training materials rolling out. And then the S is for support. Like, we want to provide pastoral support. Dwayne Bond and Doug Logan, others are doing great work with this. Just the pastor to pastor, making sure no pastor is left behind. And then financial support is an area I think we all want to beef up and be able to contribute to guys who are planting churches as well.
Yeah, man, so many great things happening in Acts 29. It's a great time to be a part of the network. And if you're listening and you've been thinking about, man, should I join? Should I apply? Yeah, go to acts29.com, hit that apply, hit that assessment, and let's get you in and let's learn. I want you to learn how you can get involved more with Acts 29. Well, Tony, you've obviously been so gifted by God as a preacher, as a writer. You've written on Christ-centered preaching, the Christ-centered expositor. You've written commentaries. You've written a lot of helpful books, Ordinary, just on the Christian life. And you have a new book out called Love Your Church. And you list 8 responsibilities of church members that are actually privileges. So what were some of your favorite ones to write? Maybe just let's talk about a few of them. Give listeners a flavor of what that book's about.
Yeah, so the 8 include belonging, welcoming, gathering, caring, serving, honoring, witnessing, and sending. And it was fun to write and somewhat of a challenge to write because this is not a book for leaders. This is a book for laity. This is the book that I wanted to hand people going through our church membership class, our church membership process. And so it's really about the life of the church, the body life of the church. It's less about ecclesiology and polity, though that's sprinkled in throughout. In fact, you've got to have a good polity to have any church membership. And so, but it's really, as you say, about these responsibilities that are privileges. And I think the first chapter on belonging is huge because there I'm just setting the foundation for how Christianity is personal, but it's not individualistic. It's corporate. That the church is not a building you visit or an event you attend, as important as these are. It's a family to which you belong, and this idea of belonging is so is such a longing in the human heart by nature, by creation. You just look at the popular TV shows through the years with Cheers or Friends or Lost or even a show called Community, that there is a longing for belonging. Didn't mean to do hip hop there, but it just rolls out sometimes. And so just teasing out some of those implications was really good. And then given our time with being, in this crazy COVID season, having the inability to gather or being restricted in our gatherings, really writing the gathering chapter was really important to not neglect the assembly. And so the book, when we set out to write it, was really more about just kind of the timeless principles of being a church member. But in God's providence, I feel like it's not only a timeless book, but it's a very timely book. And some of the chapters really apply now. So you've got chapters like caring, which have added significance in light of illness and brokenness in society, the need to care for those who have been wounded in various ways, the need to care for one another who see things differently politically and that kind of thing. And then a chapter like serving, to one of the challenges right now for pastors is getting volunteers to get back in the game and serve in childcare or hospitality or whatever it is. And so I'm hearing from pastors around the world, especially in the UK, where they were locked down a lot longer, and the book has been encouraging to help them kind of relaunch, if you will, some of these basics. And so I'm just very thankful to be able to contribute to their work.
Yeah, it's so helpful because sometimes, it's very easy, especially I think in North America, I'm assuming this isn't as true in other parts of the world, but in North America, it's just very easy. You can show up on Sunday and that's it. And you can attend the service and that's it. And not really be a part of the church, be a part of the culture, the life, the ethos of everything in the church. So I think you just help cast a great vision for here's what it looks like to really be a part of the church. And, we're talking about the gathering piece and with Hebrews 10, not forsaking the assembly as some are in the habit of doing, it's so striking that already in the first century, people are already in the habit of not showing up on Sunday morning. So to encourage every church planner that's listening, like, man, some people just, they don't, hey, this has been a problem since the first century.
Yeah. I think in that Hebrews context, it's because of persecution. And so there's even a stronger application, I think, for doing everything we can to gather together. Even if we gather at risk in terms of our physical lives, Now, pandemic is a different kind of thing because initially it was out of love that we were trying to be distanced. But nevertheless, there is that strong appeal. And the thing that really strikes me in Hebrews 10 is that the author doesn't mention preaching or singing or some of the things you think about when it comes to gathering. He says, don't neglect it, as is the habit of some, but meet together in order to stir one another up to love and good deeds. And then the parallel phrase, to encourage one another. And so obviously preaching and singing does that. That's a means by which we stir people up and encourage people. But it's more the emphasis on that mutual encouragement, the meet together so you can see each other and so you can practice this embodied life that we have as Christians living lives together and do what you can to stir one another up. He says, consider how you may.
Yeah.
I think that word consider is a big one. Earlier he says, consider Jesus. That is, think a lot about him. And I think to do Hebrews 10 well means that you give real thought and attention to what are the needs of my brothers and sisters and how is it that I may stir them up? Because they're all different and they're all going through different circumstances. And so it requires real deliberate thought. And so even in that text, you see how others focused the church is. There's not a trace of consumerism in that. It's all kind of an outward orientation to how may I stir up my brothers and sisters. And that's why we need to meet together. And I need to be stirred up by them as well. And so there's only so much you can do via Zoom and via technology in order to practice. To practice Hebrews 10, you've got to be together. And so, yeah, it's an important word for our time.
Yeah, man, that's so good. So guys, go get the book. You're getting a flavor of it here as Tony's unpacking these things. You know, one thing that comes across so clearly in the book is your love for the church, but especially for Imago Dei there in Raleigh. And you're about to celebrate your 10th year anniversary as a church. And so, you know, sometimes I think it's so easy to celebrate the highs. Like, yes, man, God did this, God did this. I wonder if you could share some highs and some lows along the way. I think there's a constant theme in church planning culture that we don't talk enough about. Some like, hey, there are going to be rough seasons. There will be disappointments. There will be heartbreaks. And we need to hear those too and prepare planters and residents for those things as well. So, Tony, what are some of the highs and lows that you'd want to share?
Well, 10 years have flown by. And they've flown by because I've enjoyed them so much. I think about Ecclesiastes, where the author speaks of God occupying the blessed person with joy in his heart. That things just kind of fly by when you're enjoying your work so much. And that's been the case. And it's largely been about team. It's been about people. So I'm a team guy. By principle, but also by experience. We tell our aspiring church planters, for us, it's less about location, where you want to plant. It's more about team and who you're with. And I think any place can get old after a period of time, or you know, the new wears off on that exciting city or community where you're planting. But sustains me is the team. And I think if you give me the team that I have now, I could be happy almost anywhere, you know? So, the high has just been the people that I've enjoyed, working with. Obviously there've been moments of great highs of celebrating baptisms and, welcoming new members. We've seen, surprising growth in our church through the years. Just seeing people developed and deployed to the nations. We will have upwards of 20 missionary units outside the United States by the end of this year. We've got several church planters in the States. I just mentioned one of them that's doing remarkably well, one in Baltimore that's doing remarkably well. So I'm like the proud dad or big brother of those churches. And so that fills me with a lot of joy. Man, being able to preach through over 30 books of the Bible now in 10 years, yeah. What a privilege it is to study the scriptures regularly and preach. We've added new elders. We're up to 15 now in our church, and getting to this point with just quality guys, a diverse team. Man, I couldn't be happier with the people we have right now. We've had a number of lows. I mean, every time a member leaves for whatever reason, that hurts. Never ceases to hurt. And this particular year has been hard. It's been hard because of all of the controversies and all of the challenges. Every decision is critiqued and criticized. I dread opening my inbox regularly. I intentionally only open it on certain days of the week when I know I'm going to be in a good mood. That's my church account. Some of those critics come from outside my church. If you write a book, it's like you're exposed before the whole world. Yeah. And so everything is critiqued. If you don't qualify something endlessly in today's society, you have your critics. So, you know, just the pain of losing people. You know, we've made some bad decisions and we'll probably make a bunch more. In fact, I know we will. And so you do have some regret as a leader in any capacity, you know, thinking, man, I wish we'd have done that differently. We should have, given better thought to that. We should have been less hasty in that particular decision. We got a church building almost 5 years ago after being 5 years old, renting space. And I put that in the celebrating category. It's a miracle. Like, it's a longer story than we
have
to share how the Lord provided it for us. And so there's a lot to celebrate, but still a lot of gospel work to do. We're in one of the fastest growing areas in the nation. Some 93 people a day are moving into the Triangle. Wow. And, Apple's building this $1 billion campus not far from our church. And so just the opportunities for gospel work here is going to continue on. And so I'm excited if the Lord gives me good health 10 more years.
Yeah. All that creatine.
Yeah, that's right.
And those eggs. keep boiling those eggs, Tony. Yeah,
those are protein pills, man.
Yeah. It's trending often on social media, people talking about church hurt. And I think there are legitimate reasons for people to share some of these things. Some people do go under some very traumatic, unhealthy situations. Sometimes people have a real hesitation to get involved with church again. Some of us have been blessed to have incredible experiences and just can't even really relate to going through church hurt. When others, we go, man, I've got the wounds, I've got the scars. So how would you encourage someone, that you run into them at the Gospel Coalition or at an X29 conference, and they're asking you about church hurt and wanting to commit and find another body and to fully invest, but they're struggling? How would you counsel and encourage them?
I would want to be very gentle. I would want to be patient and sit down and listen to them. So not every experience is one and the same. When we're talking about church hurt, there's a range of hurt. Is this a low level got offended, or is this abuse? I mean, those are two radically different things, right? I would go to Jesus first, as always, with human problems that he will not break the bruised reed, but he tends to us so that we can flourish and bear fruit again. I would encourage them with that good news that though we're wounded, though we're hurt, we have a gentle Savior. We have a sympathetic Savior who invites us to himself, who's gentle and lowly, who won't break the bruised reed. I would just try to encourage them with that Jesus will never leave them nor forsake them, that he's with them in the valley. He's with them when they're relationally wounded, that kind of thing. I would try to encourage them with the reality that this is what the church is for, is to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And that it's not that we join the church when we have no burdens. It's everybody comes into the church wounded.
Yeah.
Everybody comes into the church with burdens. And I understand that you can have terrible experiences in the church. That's just a tragedy. And I grieve over that. And I want to see people restored in every capacity, emotionally, spiritually. But I want to see them restored to a love for the church. But that's really the risk we run with any kind of relationship. To try to love and be loved is to be vulnerable. And it is to open yourself up to hurt. It's just the reality. C.S. Lewis reminds us of that in his writings. But one of the things that I think is also important to remember when Paul is talking about pastors and when Peter talks about them, they're also aware of false teachers. They're aware of those who are domineering. They're aware of corrupt leaders. But they never say, because we have corrupt leaders and false teachers, don't trust anyone.
Right.
We don't even need leaders. Just live your Christian life as a lone ranger. No, what he does is actually raise the bar to pastors to say, here's what you're supposed to do. And he tells believers, if you have pastors who are doing this, and by the way, he doesn't tell them, you know, he says, if you have faithful pastors, to honor them, to respect them. And it's not sensational things that they're doing. If they're humble, if they're caring, if they're teaching the Bible, then you ought to be really pleased that you get to be part of that. And so I think we always have the tendency to see a problem and therefore gravitate to an extreme position. Mm. And the extremes are easy. But there is complexity in life. There is messiness in life. And what I mean by that is just because there is hurt doesn't mean you go to the other extreme and totally disengage. The Bible is aware of crazy churches. I mean, that's about all we have in the New Testament. We wouldn't even have the epistles if Paul and Peter, they weren't correcting problems, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's the world we live in. And so I think sometimes it's a faulty set of expectations that people live with. So I want to see them healed. I want to take them to Jesus. I want them to experience grace. But I also want them to realize that this is the world we live in, and we're going to be hurt anytime we try to love. I mean, as a pastor, like I'm hurt, I'm wounded. You know, Henry Nouwen, you know, he called spiritual leaders, pastors, wounded healers, and that's what I feel like. The longer I pastor, the more wounds I experience, and I'm the one who's trying to provide healing. And so we're all in this together, you know. Mm.
Yeah, it makes me think of, as you're talking about taking people to Jesus, how, you know, he knows, I mean, he is the man of sorrows, acquainted with our griefs, and he knows betrayal. Mm-hmm. He knows heartache. He knows friends abandoning him. He knows people lying about him. Mm-hmm. And after his disciples all flee and run away from him, and Peter sells him out, Judas literally sells him out, that, you know, I'm always struck by resurrection morning. You know, he shows up to them and they're locked in that room and he appears to them and he doesn't say, well, thanks a lot, guys. Mm-hmm. He says, peace be with you. Mm-hmm. Like his love and his care. So Jesus knows what it's like to even be mistreated by his own people. Mm. And that includes us. And he still comes to us and says, peace be with you. Come and follow me. That's a good, yeah, says, Jesus is so great.
He says, go get Peter, you know,
yeah,
my disciples and Peter. He singles him out, the one who denies him. Mm. I'm gonna meet him in Galilee, and I'm not going to punch him. I'm going to make breakfast for him. You know, I'm going to recommission him.
Yeah,
just incredible grace, man.
I saw this amazing painting. It was on canvas, like a print. It was imagine a drone shot high up in the sky over the Sea of Tiberias, where Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, is on the shore. And you see the lake, you see like that's the Jesus figure is like really tiny. And you see one boat out there and then you see one guy in the middle swimming. It's the scene of Peter jumping out of the boat and swimming over to Jesus after he sees him. It's so powerful. And I hope anyone that's listening that has church hurt and has real pain, that we would remember the risen Christ and go to him and that he will walk you back into a loving and caring body.
That's beautiful.
So I think there's one side of that, of what we were just talking about. I think there's also another side of people who aren't committed to a local church and they don't really see it as a priority. They do kind of see it as, hey, my spirituality is me and Jesus and we're good. You know, I might go to church when it's convenient, but I don't really need to be a member. I don't need to do any of that kind of stuff. What would you say to people who they don't see it as a high priority and they just treat church membership like it's their Costco, Sam's, you know, or it's like a social club membership?
Yeah, I think often this is a biblical literacy problem. If individuals would just study the New Testament, it's not hard to see that we are made for involvement in a local church. Epistles are written to churches. When they're written to individuals, Philemon and Timothy, Titus, they still have the church in view. So Christianity is clearly corporate. It's only, Jesus only said of the church, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And all of the one another's in the New Testament, they cannot be lived out in isolation. You can't do this apart from other brothers and sisters. You often hear the statement, well, I'm part of the universal church and that kind of thing. But I think it's through involvement in a local church that you show that you're part of the universal church.
Yeah.
It's just like your personal union with Christ. You are to live that out visibly through faith and obedience. There is a visibleness. There is a fleshliness of living out our identity, you know, as individuals and also as members of a body. And so the New Testament assumes that every Christian is part of a local church, living out that identity of being part of the universal church. I think this is also the product of poor discipleship throughout the years. You know, growing up, I heard a lot of evangelism language about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Mm. And I have no problem with saying that. I mean, that's gloriously true. Christ loved me, Paul said in Galatians 2:20, and gave himself for me.
Yeah.
That's
Amen.
A personal, wonderful truth. But the number of plural pronouns in the New Testament far outweigh the first person. There is the I believe, but there's also we believe. There's more of that corporate nature. And so I think in emphasizing this personal relationship with Christ, we almost gave the impression that that's basically what Christianity is. It's you living an individual life. And when you put that in an individualistic context, like in the Western culture, then it's really hard to see people shift. And so early on, Christians need to be taught about the importance of the church. And if we don't, then we're trying to play catch up. And so I just at the end of the day think ecclesiology, the understanding of the church, is probably the biggest gap in discipleship materials over the last, I don't know, 40 to 50 years at least in the States. Tons of books on prayer, tons of books on evangelism, tons of books on marriage, tons of books right. on various things. But just people having an understanding about the centrality of the church, of seeing it from Jesus's perspective, from the New Testament perspective. This is my own story, by the way. I became a Christian through a campus ministry, went to seminary, didn't have a good understanding of the church. Actually said, I want to go to seminary, but I don't want to be a pastor. I just want to preach and do campus ministry. And I love mm-hmm. campus ministry. I'm preaching at Crew this Thursday night. But when I started to really dig into the New Testament, I just saw how precious the church is to Jesus and how yeah. it should be to me as well. And that's kind of the avenue by which I got into pastoral ministry, was just saying, no, this is where I need to devote my life.
Man, I love hearing that kind of stuff, you know, because nobody is born loving the church. Like, it's all a discipleship process and seeing how important it is to be a part. And I know you love the church, X and I, we love the church. We love to see churches strengthened. We love to see people in healthy churches and churches planted and disciples grow in churches. And I just feel like I'd probably get a couple of emails if I don't ask you this question. So you got a church planter out there. He's getting ready. They're getting ready to start. And he wants to know, like, man, what books should I preach through first? Maybe you get this question a lot. New church planter, like, what's the first couple of books you'd recommend that he preaches through?
Well, it's a great question. I'll back it up a little bit. One of the things we tell our church planters, aspiring church planters, and we have one right now, we have a team that's about to go out to Southwest Raleigh, is, man, I think you should have 12 weeks or so of sermons prepared before you hit the ground. Mm. At least 70% of each week is finished. Do it now, because when you hit the ground, it's going to come fast.
Yeah, that's good.
And time's going to be eaten up like you can never believe. Well, in fact, one of our church planters, as soon as he planted, one of the first questions was, man, how do you do this every week, this sermon prep? I don't see how you have the time to do that yeah. every week, because he's so busy. So anyway, I think having some getting some work done ahead of time would be very beneficial. As to what book to preach through, I tend to lean toward a small, manageable epistle. Philippians would be one, probably my go-to, just because you don't have a lot of theological landmines in Philippians. And it's really about the joy of gospel partnership. And so that's what you're doing as a church plant. You're in it together, striving side by side together for faith in the gospel. You have some rich passages in which you can preach to unbelievers about knowing Christ and really dive in evangelistically as well. So I think that would be a great place to start. But if you want something a little bit more weighty in terms of ecclesiology, I think Ephesians would be another go-to for me. Just so many glorious things are said about the church in the book of Ephesians. And so if you're in a context where you think you need to really emphasize what the church is and what it means to be part of it, that would be probably the book I would commend. Of course, Colossians is another small epistle that would be great for saying we're going to be centered on Christ in everything that we do. We chose Galatians 10 years ago because of the centrality of the gospel. And I just felt like we were going to need to deal with some recovering Pharisees, that legalism was going to be a problem in a context where people grew up in a church or whatever, and we just want to really emphasize what the gospel is and what it's not, and that we are not to take anything away from the gospel, but we're also not to add anything to it. And so that's what we hammered in our first series.
That's so good, man. Great counsel. That is some free coaching advice from Tony Marita. Get 12 weeks of sermons ready, and you'll be, man, You'll never get behind. You'll be ahead of the game as you keep going, because you will find, my goodness, the weeks can escape you. Okay, Tony, final three questions for how we finish every episode of the X29 podcast. What's a great book you've read recently that you'd want to recommend?
The Concise Encyclopedia of Preaching. A really good book. Willimon and Lisher, I just used it in class. It's just a great book for some history. It's not a new book, so it is dated, but I love all the detail that's there. Christopher Ashe has a book on preaching from the Psalms that I thought was outstanding. It's a very, very Christ-centered approach to the Psalms, and I have a hard time finding a lot of Christ-centered resources on the Psalms. I'm going to use that book in an initiative we're doing at Grimke probably next year. At any rate, those were helpful in terms of preaching. Our elders just read The Pastor as Counselor by David Pallison, small little book, and we're going through that book together. That was really helpful. I liked Gavin Ortland's Finding the Right Hills to Die On as well, just thinking through how to be unified and where do we draw the lines on certain things. Those have been some that have I've really enjoyed of late.
Okay. Say the first one again, a great encyclopedia of preaching. What was the title?
Concise
encyclopedia. Okay. So I can verify now you're the first person to recommend an encyclopedia as a great book they've read recently.
Well, I use it because of the history section. It's hard to find a concise history of preaching. First of all, that's, 70 pages or so. You don't want, there are several that are multi-volumes. And then there's some that are way too white and American, and they don't give enough attention to voices outside of the states, for example. And they do it. Now, these guys are at Duke. We have some theological disagreements on certain things, but they're wonderful writers, and they've written a ton on important subjects. So I do appreciate the book.
Yeah. Okay. What's your go-to order in a coffee shop?
I mean, I'm a pour-over guy. I want a special roasted Colombia or Ethiopian pour over.
That's what I got right here in my A29 Yeti, filled with some Colombian pour over. It's so good. From Edison Coffee Roasters there in Flower Mound. It's amazing. Okay, last question. Your favorite verse and why?
Probably Romans 8:31. If God be for us, who can be against us? Actually starts out, what shall we say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? I think that these things points back to all the way to the beginning of Romans, as several commentators point this out. Paul, these things could refer to just Romans 8, but I think because he's about to start a new section in Romans 9 to 11, the question is, what do we say about Romans 1 to 8? how do we summarize all of that? And having said all that he said up to that point, Paul answers that question in a question. If God be for us, who can be against us?
Yeah.
In other words, how do you summarize the good news of Romans 1:8, that we've been justified, reconciled, empowered by the Spirit, adopted by God? There's no condemnation for those offenses in Christ Jesus. All things are working together for our good and to his glory. And his summary is, God is for us. Mm. And I can hardly think of anything better in the world than to know that Almighty God is not opposed to me. but that he's for me.
Amen.
And that he's proven that, verse 32, by putting forward Christ in our place. Something has happened in space, time, and history to prove once and for all that God really is for us. And so we can't let pain and hardship deceive us. The pain and hardship is real, but ultimately, and people will be opposed to us, but Paul says God is for us. So our greatest problem has been solved, and that's good news.
Amen. I love that. It reminds me of one of my favorite psalms, Psalm 56. He says, "This I know, God is for me."
Yeah, that's probably an echo of that psalm, I think.
Yeah, man. This I know. I don't know about this. I don't know about that, but this I know, God is for me. Well, Tony, thank you so much for coming on the X29 podcast. It's a joy to have you on, talk about preaching, talk about church, talk about your book. And so thank you, brother.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate your work, man. It's a joy to partner with you.
Well, listeners, be sure to go and grab Tony's new book, Love Your Church. You can find a link to it right here in your podcast app. All you got to do is just slide up there on your podcast app and you'll see a link. Go and buy that on Amazon. Read it. Consider stocking it there in your church bookstores. Give it out to new members. I think it'll just be a great blessing and a service to those of you that you want them to grow in their ecclesiology, and not even just a theology of what the church is, but to really imbibe and live out what it means to be the church. And so we also ask you to leave a rating there in your podcast app. It helps the show get out to more people, and we'd love to hear from you. So also go to x29.com. You can learn more about X29, our initiatives. So remember, listeners, let's keep planting churches to the ends of the earth.